Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and welcome to Tasty Moon Radio. We have two of the stars of BC wine, of Canadian wine. We start with Severine Pint, who came to us from France, of course. She is the winemaker, viticulturist, and managing partner of Le Vupin and La Stella in the South Okanagan, for which she was knighted in 2023 to the Order of Agricultural Merit by the Consul General of France. Wonderful winemaker. Can't wait to talk to her about her wines, and especially her Washington wines, her experience of crafting in BC Washington wines. And the second prince of the vineyards is Grant Stanley from Spearhead, the winemaker and general manager. Not only were they named Best Small Winery in Canada, they were also named Best Winery in Canada. Lost most of their vineyards, and we'll tell that story and how they're recovering and how they've overcome with their Washington wines that they call dual citizen. Welcome to Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Winemakers Cut in the District Wine Village in Oliver. Their latest releases, crafted in BC, are now available for you to enjoy. They include some of the favorite wines, Sauvignon Blanc, Rosé, Muscat, Chardonnay, Gruner Veltliner, and a unique sparkling Gruner Veltliner. These wines were already featured in top Canadian restaurants, and we are offering you a chance to experience them firsthand. And keep an eye on the no and low alcohol offerings in the Opera Room right next door. You can find the wines themselves at the District Wine Village in Oliver and on the web at winemakerscut.ca. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. If you've been joining us for, well, since the start of spring releases, you'll know that I am trying to follow as quickly and as thoroughly as possible the crafted in BC wines that are being available to us. And I knew I'd get to Severine Pint at Le Vupin and La Stella, and we finally reached that time. How are you? How's the year? How's the year?
It's good. We're very good. We can actually see growth in the vineyard, something that on time was bud break a little bit earlier this year than it was last year or the past 2 years. And the vines who survived that we were able to retrain or prune normally, because some vines actually were very resilient and didn't suffer that much that we can see, of course, from the winter, we're able to push and we're going to have cluster. We have flowers, we're going to have clusters. So it's good.
One thing at a time.
Yes.
I saw somewhere in an article you were interviewed going into all of this that you were hopeful. How did that hope hold up for you?
Well, we had to remove about 30% of our acreages, which is not 100%, so that's good. And about 30% of the rest was, well, 40% was we were able to prune normally. And then the rest, we just had to retrain from suckers that we got from the bottom. And so we're just going to retrain the vine and see if they survive. Like we're hoping that the vascular system in the lower part of the trunk is okay. And then we're going to have to do with that. So yes, there's hope, and from what we can see here, it's growing and it's working. So
I love the fact that the suckers, the first thing to be clipped off in a normal year, become the survival technique. They become the suckers become the heroes.
Yes, I don't think we would ever say that, but yes, we are at that point.
Thank you, suckers. What did it take in human terms to get through this? This roller coaster ride of cold snaps, doom, regeneration. What did it take through human terms?
It was extremely difficult. I'm going to be straightforward. I'm a planner, and so I have a vision always to 5 to 10 years. Yep. And when that cold snap happened, and we finally realized the severity of no crop, of some vines potentially being dead, it was the whole world collapsed. The hopes for the future, how are we going to survive? How are we going to keep the team? How are we going to, where do I fit as a winemaker in this? Because if I look at myself just selfishly, I'm only good because I have good grapes. And so if I don't have those grapes, where do I fit in?
Yep.
And so there was a ton of questions, a ton of question with no answers. And but because we had built over the years of a very good team, and the owners are also behind us, they're here, we were able as a group to look at the situation and assess little by little, step by step, mini step by mini steps. And we went all in as a group. And so that's what helped us survive.
And the community around you, the farming community, because you were all
And the
going through the same
community,
thing, yeah.
because we reached out, there was a tremendous movement in the BC wine industry, where people tried to gather forces. And then we came together as a sink. We did not work in silo, like we were mainly doing before. And so that had a very good effect. That's a positive effect of that cold snap, is all the associations are now working together. We created the Wine Grape Industry Task Force to try and solve problems as a group. And this is positive.
Just to wrap that up, I wrote down these words and I thought they might apply. I don't know, because you went through and I didn't. It took smarts, it took luck, and it took drive, driven to be driven. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. I think it's we were lucky for us in our operations. We have vineyards all the way through the Okanagan. That spans about 25 to 30 kilometers between north and south, and then as well on the east and the west side. And the cold didn't settle the same way on all those different locations. So some were affected, some less. So that was our luck. Because we are resilient and we have a system in place, like being certified sustainable with the Sustainable Wine Growing BC has taught us to that we know ourselves, we know our operations, we know everything, and so that helped us to move forward. And because we are passionate people, we couldn't let go. So yes, all those words apply.
Severine Pint, Le Vieux Pin, La Stella. Did you replant any new varietals?
We planted, we are replanted over the next this year and next year. We're changing the location of the varietals. So
Okay.
for example, Le Vieux Pin happened, the site is on a terrace at 400 meters of altitude. It happens that the cold kind of settles there. So the Syrah that was planted there obviously didn't survive
Survive.
because they're very sensitive, more sensitive.
Yep.
So we put in Cabernet Franc, because the Cabernet Franc is one of the varietal that over the two cold snap, 23-24, happened to survive and still produce. So that's what we're doing. We have vineyards that are warmer in the south, so we're replanting Syrah there. And we're introducing two varietals that we had looked at over the past years that I've worked with. Well, one I've worked with in the Languedoc is Cinsault. So we are introducing some Cinsault next year, and some Vermentino as well, as a white. So for La Stella, Cinsault will be for the Vieux Pin, and then Vermentino for La Stella.
Well done. Very
Yeah.
exciting. Very exciting. Now, I have some wines. I'd like to talk about your wine, Severine Pint from Le Vieux Pin and La Stella. This is your Washington edition. And it says Petit Blanc, Chardonnay, Viognier, Sablanc, Roussin. Petit Blanc changes whatever the season gives you, correct?
Yes, so the Petit Blanc is our second line, and the Petit Blanc is usually made out of the hard press and the juice lees that we filter, and it's a because it's all together. It's like an explosion of aromas, and this year we got some juice and some grapes from Washington. So we got some grapes from the Red Mountain Columbia Valley area,
Okay.
and then some juice from the Horse Heaven Hills. So the Petit Blanc is a blend of the Chardonnay from the Columbia Valley and then the other from the Horse Heaven
Where
Hills.
were the surprises with the Washington wines?
It was extremely interesting to talk to the viticulturalist to see how they've adapted and then what they're doing. So there's a lot of own-rooted vines. They have sometimes two trunks because they've just been taking the sucker and then rebuilding. We learned a lot. The reception, the welcome was absolutely fantastic. It was so heartwarming to see those people like and then a good exchange, like no competition. They were happy to help us.
What's the price point on the Petit Blanc?
It's about $21.
And how many cases?
500, I think.
You couldn't make enough of that. It's so good. It's so good. Sèvres Pinot, Le Vieux Pin, La Stella. Now, the Ava.
Yes.
How old is your daughter now?
Eva just turned 17. It's amazing.
Does she even remotely interested in the wine business?
Nope,
Okay,
no.
fine.
They see their mama working way too hard. I said, nope, this is not for me.
Okay. You have a thing about the Ava, first of all, and that is that no nonsense. Don't fool around with it. Treat it. Let the fruit tell you what it's going to be. This is a 2024, 54% Roussanne, 46% Viognier. Home, two of my favorites anywhere on the planet. Stainless steel, and this was, he says, Southern Washington State. The
Yes.
Horse Heaven Hills, yes.
Horse Heaven Hills is like directly 5 hour drive
Yeah,
south of
south.
Osoyoos. Their climate conditions are very similar as well. So when I went down and tasted the blocks and the berries, I could really find some similarities between the flavor in the flavors, like that very floral, delicate aromas that I find in a Roussanne
Yeah.
here and in our sandy soil was very, very present there.
Familiar yet different.
Yes, it is. But we ended up so with the control that we had because we came in so late in the season, so there was very little we could do in the vineyard because they were managing the vineyard. So what we had to do is we had to really play on the heart on the picking decision. And then really work with the winemakers because those grapes were pressed on site, and then they shipped the juice. So we really worked with them
Nice.
to decide and to define when we were going to stop for the free run or the hot press, and then when we were going to pick and how, and that's what made the wine in a sense that it's I know there's a bunch of other winemakers that bought this same
Of
blocks,
course.
and I think if we were to taste the wines, they're different because the grapes were picked at different times, and that's where us winemakers came into play.
Thank you for doing that. All right, I'm going to. Oh, one more. What did you want the Ava to be? Because you know, we love Ava. We love our Ava. We all recommend it to one another. What had to be in that nose, on that palate? What had to be there?
We were looking for the elegance, the
There
flowers.
you go.
That's the mostly the Roussanne, and then in the Viognier, we were looking for that dried apricot, slight oiliness, a little bit, like creaminess added.
Salient, yes.
And then, so what we did, we got that, and so we did a mix of fermentation in stainless steel and in barrels to try and add a little bit of creaminess with the barrels and the lees stirring and lees aging, and we still fermented same type of temperature to try and enhance the same
Sure.
kind of flavors, and we got something that is not that the Eva that we have here from here because it's not the exact same soil, exact same climate, but we got very close.
How many cases of the Ava?
About 500 as well.
And the price point?
I think it's about $35.
$35. And it's basic same. Some people actually change their labels entirely. But yours in the left-hand corner says a Washington edition. And I'm recommending whatever, for whatever it's worth, that wine stores, all of them, take all of these Washington wines and place them in one spot so you can actually shop Washington crafted in BC wines and not have to search the entire store. Make it as easy as possible so we can sell this stuff.
Because we have 3 years.
Yep. Severin Pint, Le Vipin, La Stella. We will be back with the La Stella wines right after this. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Winemaker's Cut in Oliver. At the District Wine Village in Oliver, right next door to Winemaker's Cut, there's a new tasting room called the Opera Room. Of course, it's been created by Winemaker's Cut. No low spritzers, plum cider, rosé, piquettes, cranberry cider, and more. No and low alcohol. The tasting room is called the Opera Room. At Winemaker's Cut, the grown in Washington, crafted in BC wines have arrived. Wines made in Canada, crafted in BC from imported grapes, farmed in Yakima Valley, Washington. All the details can be found at winemakerscut.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench. Just a note from winemaker Kathy Malone. We've just rolled out the new summer menu, and they've already started the Hillside Happy Hour. It's going to run every Thursday from 2 to 6 p.m. for a free tasting experience in the wine shop every Thursday at Hillside. Don't forget you can join the Naramata Bench for an unforgettable evening of celebration with the Naramata Bench Wineries and the Naramata Inn. That's July the 17th. And as part of that, you can get the Naramata Bench Insider's Pass, which is available at Hillside. And they've just won a double gold at the All-Canadian Wine Awards for the 2021 Gamay. You can find all the details for Hillside Winery and Bistro at hillsidewinery.ca. She is the executive winemaker, the viticulturist, and the managing partner of Le Vipin, La Stella. She is Severine Pint, and we're talking to her in the South Okanagan. Yes, she has been knighted, but we've just moved on from that. That's an award that somebody honored her, the French. And I'm sure you were on. I'm almost positive you were honored to be recognized like in that manner. And I think your neighbors might have taken you for granted.
I don't know. It was a surprise to be knighted, and I'd never expected something like that from the French government. And it's still hard to understand that I got that, but
you did.
Yeah.
Tell us about the relationship between Le Vipin and La Stella. Same company, but completely different ideas.
Yeah. So La Stella is, Le Vipin and La Stella are two sister winery. One is in Oliver, Le Vipin, and La Stella is in Osoyoos, right on the lake. And La Stella is more oriented towards Italian style. So we often say we have a foot in Italy and a foot in Canada. The wine is more like we play with, we have some Sangiovese, and then on the white and the rosé, we play with whites that are coming maybe from the Alto Adige region, like to try and get and keep that nice crispy style that they have over there.
I know that it's very competitive between Italy and France. Obviously, anytime you go there, you can see that. How do the French process and wines influence Italy, and how do the Italians make their presence known or influence the French, or do they not?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think the common thread that we see having been away from the two countries for so long now is that they have the terroir notion, the knowledge that's ingrained in their in their culture, in their vein. They don't have a second thought about is a great wine coming from the vineyard or not? Is the winemaker making it? No, without question, it's coming from the terroir. If you have the soil, the grape that you plant there, the people that are managing the grapes, the country, all that is ingrained in that word terroir. And I think over the years there's been fluctuation, and the grapes are different. So I think you don't work a Sangiovese the same way that you work in a Syrah in the Rhone, or you don't work in the Biolo the same way as you work a Pinot in the Burgundy. So they all have their different characteristics that are adapted to their soils and to their climate. And I think there's a lot of back and forth of exchange of knowledge, especially on the pruning. There's a lot of
There's a lot of
back and
lot
forth
of
between.
pruning, a lot of pride,
Yes.
stubborn pride.
Yeah.
This let me move on before I ran out of time here. La Stella, the absolutely wonderful La Stellina Rosato.
So the rosé is we put the grapes in the press, and we use the press as a macerating tank. And so that's the and then when we get the color that we want, then we press and we extract the juice. And then for the Sangiovese part, sometimes we put the grapes in the red grapes in the tank. And then at one point we're going to about two, after 2 days, we're going to take a little bit, like maybe 5%
Okay.
of the juice from that tank. That's called a bleeding.
Yep.
That's we take some blood out of the tank, some juice, and that's how the we get the some of the rosé color of some juice.
Severine, the Leggero, the Chardonnay, sourced from Red Mountain.
So the Leggero is the Chardonnay, and the Chardonnay was sourced from the Red Mountain. It's actually Colombia because it's like right
Sure.
close, like
Okay.
the separation is in the middle of the block of Chardonnay, and the fruit were delicious. We were able to pick exactly at the right time to aim to the style, so we were very happy with those fruits.
The La Salina, this and that, it is such a reward to pour this at the end of a day over with a meal.
So what we aim for the rosé. So La Stellina is a rosé made of Cabernet Franc and
Right.
Merlot, more Cab Franc than Merlot. And what we do there, we pick the Cab Franc slightly underripe to still have that hint of green pepper, like the bell pepper, on the nose, but with some fruits. So there's a lingering acidity, and then some fresh fruits, and like you mentioned, raspberry, strawberry, very crunchy fruits, bread fruit like that. And so it is a perfect patio wine. You can drink it just on its own, or because it has a little bit of structure due to the little tannin that have been extracted during the maceration, you can just have it as well with some pizza or some like I would say a caprese salad. That would go very well.
Summer. It goes well with
Yes,
summer.
and it's coming finally.
Never fast enough. The Rosato, what's the price point? Okay.
$25.
How many cases?
About 300, I think.
How about the Chardonnay
Leggero, is about 25 as well, and there were only 200 cases made. So,
Is it, are you going to recommend that in order to get your hands on these Washington Series wines? From Le Vupin and La Stella, that we join the wine club if we are not already there.
yeah, join the wine club. You have a better chance to have some of the limited series, and then we do also have some wine from BC wines from the years prior. So we have some very
You got a six pack going on, don't you?
yeah, we do six packs, we do 12, we do customs as well. And also something new that the tasting rooms are open 7 days a week,
Nice.
and walk-ins are also welcome. So
Did you come back with any reds?
we did. We have some few reds that are coming up. We made 100% Cinsault red. There's
Yeah,
only 160 cases made. It's delicious. So if you do join the club, you may have one. And we're also making Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre. Because we were able to get some Grenache and Mourvèdre from the Waluki slope. Those two varietals, we cannot grow them here, and we will never be, because they are very sensitive. Like Grenache at -15
sure.
is a no-go. It won't survive. So we did a little bit of that. Well, we are actually going to bottle it end of June. We're making about 1,000 cases, and from what I've heard, it's really good. So we'll see. It's coming up.
So, you know, the Okanagan is going to change, has to change. We can't just hope that a cold snap won't come along, because there'll be other cold snaps. What won't we see anymore? What varietals? Do you think Syrah's done?
No.
Okay.
I think we have to adapt. We have to plant. We have to have a much better understanding of our terroir and our climate and our microclimate, because we can see Osoyoos was not as affected as Oliver, for example. It is warmer in Osoyoos. The lake is more present, is bigger, so the lake effect is more important. And so it will have to adapt. What we'll see difference is the way that we manage the vineyards. We'll have to adapt in terms of how we plant. Maybe we'll keep some suckers every year and then we bury them.
Sure.
Maybe we'll have to bury. We're doing some experiment with geotextile. Is that the way to go? It is very expensive.
Yes.
Do we have the weather for that? Because our cold is not all the time there. We don't have much snow. So with no snow, those textiles are not ideal, because the temperature is actually colder inside during the night. So we're still in the phase of experiment. There's techniques out there. But what will work for our terroir and our region is to be decided, and we'll try. We're trying.
Okay. In your bones, in your heart, will we, the wine fan, come back to the Okanagan? Will we go back to our shelves and go looking for these wines? Do they realize the crisis that has hit the Okanagan and the wine community, the farming community, and how they can help save and move them along?
I think that because we are passionate people and we believe in those BC terroirs, in those BC wines, the Washington edition was just a way to survive, to keep the business alive. But eventually, our vineyards are there. They're not back in the south. So we're going to, the vineyards are getting back to life. And we have done such a great job at promoting BC and then really making excellent wine with the BC terroir. And when so we did recently some tasting of some 2012 Equinox Syrah and 2012 Maestoso. So Equinox Syrah is from the Vieux Pin, Maestoso is our flagship at the Stella.
Sure.
It's 100% Merlot, and honestly, it tasted like it was made yesterday. It was that 13 years of aging is doesn't really show. So those wines have another maybe 10 years to go. So when you drink those wines and then you have that much freshness 13 years later, it shows that the terroir has something. And so that's why I am very, very confident that we're going to be keeping crafting, making those wines from BC and promoting BC wines.
Thank you for that. Are you hopeful?
Yes.
Coming full circle.
Some people would say, well, is it really sustainable to keep growing vines in such an extreme climate? Because we have an extreme climate. It's a cool climate, but it's an extreme climate, especially with climate change. And I debated, I'm the chair of the Sustainable Wine Growing BC, so I'm asking myself those questions. And I think in the long haul, when I taste those old wines, yep, and I see the energy and the dynamic and the usefulness of this industry, I think there's hope, and then there is a future, because we are resilient and we will adapt, because we want to feature what that this great terroir is giving us.
Will we see wine sales across Canada? Will we see your wines in Halifax, Nova Scotia?
We are already in some of those provinces through the legal channels.
How about Montreal? How about Montreal?
And we want to be there. And I am hoping that whatever political climate we are in is helping those barriers to fall and to have this freedom of circulation for all goods. Because the people from Montreal, from Quebec, they know their wines. Like SAQ is one of the biggest importer of wines from around the world. And if we were to be able to compare some of the BC wine to some of those wines, they would say, "Oh my God, this is delicious." And it's right there in Canada. It's right there. So we reduce the footprint, the carbon footprint, because we don't have to travel that far. And it's better. It would be better for the environment.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Whatever victories come your way, they're well earned, as you well know. Website.
Levioupain.ca and lastella.ca. That's the website. You can order online. As I mentioned, the two wineries are open 7 days a week for tasting.
Have a grand summer, and I'll see you when the reds show up.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good
Merci.
day.
Merci. She is the executive winemaker, the viticulturist, and the managing partner of Le Vupin, La Stella. She is Severine Pint. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench. Just a note from winemaker Kathy Malone. We've just rolled out the new summer menu, and they've already started the Hillside Happy Hour. It's going to run every Thursday from 2 to 6 p.m. for a free tasting experience in the wine shop every Thursday at Hillside. Don't forget, you can join the Naramata Bench for an unforgettable evening of celebration with the Naramata Bench Wineries and the Naramata Inn. That's July the 17th. And as part of that, you can get the Naramata Bench Insider's Pass, which is available at Hillside. And they've just won a double gold at the All-Canadian Wine Awards for the 2021 Gamay. You can find all the details for Hillside Winery and Bistro at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by WineBC, where the mountains meet the vines. Your BC wine adventure begins. Savor and explore vibrant flavors as you wander through rolling vineyards. Your perfect getaway is waiting. Start planning now at winebc.com. He is Grant Stanley. Grant Stanley is the general manager and, more importantly, is the winemaker of Spearhead Winery on the Benchlands outside Kelowna. At the Canadian National Wine Lion Awards, they were named Best Small Winery in Canada and Best Winery in Canada. That's how good they are. He's just stepped off a tractor. We're going to talk to the Dusty Grant Stanley. You've come from tractor time?
Well, yeah, we're in the midst now of mowing and weed spraying and fertilizing, and we just completed planting 23,000 new vines here on the home property at Spearhead, and so we're grateful to have all those little babies in the ground now. A lot of Riesling, four clones of Pinot Noir, some Chardonnay. So no, very happy to have this behind us, and now we just gotta basically get them up to the wire and get everything into production. Probably a small crop in the vintage of 2027.
Why those four plantings?
Well, we had a lot of winter kill and
Yep.
damages, that caused us to kind of reorganize and replant the whole vineyard, and there was a lot more Pinot Noir here in the past and a lot more Chardonnay. So we basically carved up sections of the vineyard that we thought would be less susceptible to winter damage, the areas that have better airflow, every areas that have more slope. And we planted own-rooted Riesling 21B
Yes.
and Clone 239 into the remainder. So we've decreased the amount of area that we have into Pinot and Chardonnay, but we think that those areas are the surviving spots on the vineyard, and so it's a little more survival techniques, if you like.
When we last talked, you were talking about your dual citizen. Now it's a reality.
Yeah, it is a reality, and those wines are have been out in the marketplace for quite a while now. We're very proud of them, and certainly had a great experience importing grapes and making wine from Washington.
You
All of
made some friends.
Made some new friends, and very hopeful that we'll be allowed to do that again this year, because there's certainly still a huge undersupply of vinifera, good quality vinifera grapes here in the Okanagan again this year.
Is anybody dragging their feet on that issue?
There's lots of representation and discussions with the government. I'm not privy to all of that, but it's certainly taking place. I know that much, and I'm pretty sure, hopefully, that by the end of July or June, they'll come forward with a decision.
Okay. Well, let's hope it's the right one.
For sure. In the meantime, we have these wonderful wines. I'm very happy. They've turned out great, and I have just finished malolactic fermentation on some fabulous Pinot Noir that we imported from Oregon last year. That's aging away in barrel nicely, and the Syrah from Walla Walla from Eastern Washington as well. So, things are looking up.
You did some shopping, didn't you?
We brought a few key varietals in that we hadn't worked with before. One of them, I think the Sauvignon Blanc,
Sure.
has been extremely well received by all of our customers, wine club, all of our neighbors. Really, really enjoying that one.
You did your own sticker as well.
Yes, a little bit of a statement there. When we came up with the dual citizen plan, we thought it was a really, really awesome package because it really, was very clear about where the wines were from, and the whole program, the vineyards identified on the label. I think it's a really nice little twist there with the passport stamps and whatnot. And then, of course, politically, it became a rather sensitive subject, doing business and any kind of importation from the US. So, the owners thought it would be a good idea if we just sort of had a little bit of extra on there.
Made before the madness. I've got to get one of those stickers for my clipboard here. Spearhead 2024 Riesling, the dual citizen, Carousel Vineyard, Southeast Washington, specifically.
Just out of Prosser.
Okay.
Very, very, a flat site. Great spot for Riesling, small vineyard, well farmed. And the clone is 21B and 239.
Did you go looking for conditions that sort of matched what you were growing in?
No, not really. We were just, I was really just looking for high quality fruit and good growers, farmers that know what they're doing. And I certainly found that down there. I was very impressed by the farmers, the grape growers' attitude in terms of wanting to please the winemaker, if you like, and supply the kind of grapes that we were after. Just a really good experience altogether. They're very professional in how they operate down there. There's a lot of vineyards and a lot of big tracts of land, so economy of scale. They're able to farm much bigger area. At a lower cost, quite
Vast,
frankly.
vast tracts of land,
Yes.
especially in and around Yakima. Oh my goodness. The 2024 dual citizen, by the way, can I tell you that the Riesling was inhaled on this end?
Inhaled.
Yes.
Well, that's good. Excellent.
It was, I couldn't believe how quickly we went through it. Because we based it around a dinner. You try to do the do you right and do the wine right by not sipping something and just not tasting anything, putting it up against food and just having a great time. And
Like a good Riesling should, I think, some of those wines, in particular, maybe the rosé and the white Pinot, are quite satisfying to drink on their own on a patio situation. But the Riesling, I was definitely making that for consumption with food. It's not sweet. It's not bone dry. It's got a very nice balance.
And can't be bullied by spices and things. It holds its own.
Good, strong flavors. One of the most unusual thing about the wines in general, or the juices that came from those areas, is that the numbers, the comparison to what we're used to seeing here in terms of total acidity in the grapes, and were completely different. Much lower acids, much more kind of genuine flavor ripeness. It's obviously when you take a few degrees south, it makes a big, very big difference in the ripening.
Soil composition. When that flood took off from McIntyre Bluff and ended up in Walla Walla, it did wash over certain areas of Washington State, obviously, but that was a river. There were lava rocks above that, and so and you're growing in that. You're not dealing with our soil, but your own.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we do share a lot of similarities in terroir, but definitely I noticed with all of them that we're dealing with different numbers, and acidity is a big part of it. And I think the acid, is just generally a little tamer down there. And so I was quite surprised the lower alcohols lower acids in the wines really kind of make the balance quite different.
Nice. Grant Stanley, the winemaker, general manager at the Winery of the Year, Small Winery of the Year in Canada, and
Yeah.
number one Winery of the Year, the double shot, my friends.
Yes,
And we're
we're hanging
talking,
on to that as long as we can.
of course, dual citizen Sauv Blanc, the Den Hoed in
The Den
Yakima.
Hoed Vineyard.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Again, in that general vicinity of Prosser, and this vineyard was sourced to me by a broker that we worked with down there called Lisa Kendall. Great lady with great experience at finding good fruit, finding good vineyards. Highly recommend her. And the Sauvignon Blanc was something we decided to get into because it's kind of a good fit for a cool climate specialist like myself. And I had the opportunity to make Sauvignon, obviously, at Aotearangi in New Zealand.
Yes.
This was certainly not a New Zealand style Sauvignon. It doesn't have any of that kind of strong, gooseberry and capsicum and some of those flavors. I'd see it more in the French style, where there's kind of more lemon and lemon zest, and lots of herb, dried herb kind of character coming through in the wine.
Yeah, speaking of character, it's on the back label. It says it's well known the character of Sauv Blanc varies considerably depending upon the part of the world where it's produced. This wine exhibits Washington State's typical fresh fruit and lively acidity, which got my attention right away.
The acid's great. It's crunchy. There's good length in the wine. People ask me, when I think is a good time to drink this, and I think it's really good oyster wine. Maybe before dining. I usually try and drink wines like this, Sauvignon Blanc, while I'm cooking, as opposed to, after
Yes.
cooked.
I was thinking spot prawn season.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It'd stand up to that as well.
Okay, one more. The 2024 Pinot Gris from Rose Hills in Yakima.
Again, Pinot Gris, a completely different expression of Pinot Gris that we see here. A lot lower acid, and you'll notice that there's quite a firm color to the
Yes.
wine, like a kind of, you could say, a Pinot Grigio. This isn't from extended skin contact. It was just the grapes. The skin's giving that little color boost.
Wow.
And again, we don't sort of see that type of thing here. You can leave wine on skins and you still don't get that pinky, pale color. So it's unusual for sure, but I really like the balance in this wine. It's not too sweet, it's not too dry. It's a nice low alcohol, so it kind of, it makes it very, very pleasant drinking.
And just a beautiful brush of oak.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's just a small amount of it is fermented in used Chardonnay barrels, so basically 2-year-old French barrels. And without a doubt, those barrels, that little 10% or so, hit, provides a little bit of extra mouthfeel because the lees is being stirred and into contact with the wine the whole time. So it's a nice addition. I've been doing that for many years with Pinot Gris, mostly steel tank, but just a little bit of barrel to kind of flesh out the wine.
Imagine, my friends, Pinot Gris from Rosa Hills in Yakima, pear and honey, a peach. But did I imagine ginger?
No, the ginger is definitely there.
Okay.
I really like that feature for sure.
He's Grant Stanley. We're going to be right back with part two of this conversation. We're going to talk about the white Pinot Noir and the Pinot Noir Rosé from Spearhead. He is Grant Stanley. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Wine BC. Where the mountains meet the vines, your BC wine adventure begins. Savor and explore vibrant flavors as you wander through rolling vineyards. Your perfect getaway is waiting. Start planning now at winebc.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Best Coast Distillers, where innovation meets passion on the Vancouver Island Peninsula. From sourcing our own local core ingredients to experimenting with fermentation yeasts, Best Coast is committed to pushing the limits of what's possible. Living and working in this warm Mediterranean-like microclimate within Canada is like winning the distiller's jackpot. Clean sea air, steady temperatures, and a bounty of local ingredients fuel our creativity. And perfectly timed for summer in 2025, they have released Canada's first estate-grown small batch Agricole rum. You can find all the details at bestcoastdistillers.com. Grant Stanley is with us here on Tasting Room Radio at Spearhead, the winemaker, the general manager. We'll put the price points on our website, tastingroomradio.com, so you can shop along. We're doing dual citizen here, and it's your response to being legally allowed to source your fruit from out of province, Washington State in particular, Oregon as well. What was their attitude when we all came knocking on the door down there? Were they understanding?
Oh, yeah. You know, my colleagues, I'm fortunate that I've had done a couple of vintages in Oregon in my early life, you could say. And it was a long time ago now, but many of the same people that I worked with are still there.
Wow.
Some of them are the pioneers in the industry, the Ken Wrights, Laurent Montelou. All of these guys are fabulous colleagues, and I have a lot of respect for the industry, and particularly the Pinot Noir industry there. They bring a lot of great people together over the years, and have fabulous conferences and whatnot as well. But their industry is under severe duress at the moment. They have a shrinking market, yeah, and expanding vineyards and production, which make for, you know, very, very challenging situation at the moment economically for a lot of those vineyards and winemakers. So we came along at a pretty good time for them. And I know some of my colleagues down there and myself were offered some, you know, pretty spectacular parcels of fruit, just simply because they, you know, didn't have buyers lining up as they usually do.
Timing.
Yeah, timing is everything. And for sure, we were very fortunate to, you know, be able to shop around and decide exactly which AVA, which area we wanted to buy from. And we chose, in Oregon, we chose a fabulous vineyard in the Amity-Yola Hills area called Cherry Hill. And we'll be making Pinot Noir with two clones, the Pommard clone and the 777 clone. And they'll be separated and coming out as two different wines next spring. They're currently in barrel. My experience both in Washington and Oregon was the negotiations over price were very much in our favor because they had a healthy supply, we should say. And just as I mentioned earlier on, the farmers and how they operate down there is very professional. And they were willing to do pretty much whatever we asked in respect to vineyard techniques and picking times and whatnot. So, yeah, I'm very satisfied with all of my interactions down there.
Heading back to dual citizen territory, friends, are on shelves right now. The 2024 White Pinot Noir. We're talking balance here, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. In this situation, I was, you know, many years ago, I came across a fellow called Grant DeVries, and I was actually at the time I was buying vineyard equipment from him, and he mentioned that he had a small vineyard enterprise as well, and so we got it back in touch and made an agreement. I ended up buying 20 tons of Pinot Noir from him last year, specifically to make rosé and white Pinot Noir. Fabulous pricing. Again, a super farmer. And we actually processed this juice. So, you know, because of the sheer size of it, we actually contracted a crush and press facility to juice the wine down there so that we were able to transport it rapidly through the system. And within 24 hours, we had pressed, finished juice arriving here at the winery under refrigerated truck. Really great conditions for making these two wines, the rosé and the white Pinot, made from the same source.
Wow, the whole episode. I mean, just to run a camera on that would be fantastic.
Yeah. There's a lot of logistics involved in it, and when you're actually not on site, you have to rely on a lot of other people along the way. But it all worked out very well, and I ended up with some fabulous Pinot Noir juice. I think it was the most suitable thing to do with these Pinot Noir grapes because the berry size was quite large.
Yeah.
They were machine harvested.
Ah.
Certainly not ideal for fermentation on skins. So in the case of the white Pinot Noir, it was basically, you know, pressed off skins immediately. And in the rosé, there was a slight delay on skins. So basically 8 hours on skins.
Okay. All right.
And so that's really the difference in the color of the two. One has a little more extended contact. I tried to make differentiation in the winemaking as well, using specifically dry white wine yeasts for the white Pinot Noir, very vigorous yeast, and running the ferment super cold. The rosé, of course, standard kind of rosé production with allowing some residual sugar behind, so a less vigorous yeast that I was able to stop with a little more sweetness.
A nice wet stone minerality to the Pinot Noir. Lovely,
Yeah.
lovely,
The white
lovely.
Pinot's got those classic, peach and pit fruit kind of characters going on in there as well. It's very attractive.
How many cases of the white Pinot Noir?
It's about 500 of both of those.
Both, okay. And
White
how?
Pinot Noir was, sorry, a little more, like 700 white Pinot Noir and 500 of the rosé.
And Grant, how many cases of the Riesling, do you remember?
500 as well. This was the other advantageous situation that I was able to achieve down there, is we were able to kind of, order the amount of grapes
Wow.
and juice based on the size of the vessel.
Wow.
And so sometimes here, just on based on what I'm usually harvesting, I try to, I effectively keep everything separate in the winery in different tanks. But you can end up with a lot of partially filled half tanks, small lots sitting in larger tanks. And so this was an opportunity to kind of maximize our stainless steel capacity. And we just basically ordered 5,000 liters for a 5,000 liter tank. So very efficient way to operate as well.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is another session of Tasting Room Radio from Spearhead. He is Grant Stanley. Does there anything qualify as small lots in the Pinot Gris or the Sauv Blanc?
Well, the only real rare bird that I have at the moment is that I made a Gamay Noir that is currently released or thereabouts, very close to release here, from a Summerland vineyard. That was the previous year, so we're talking about a vintage 2023 wine. Those vines are obviously no longer there and may or may not be replanted again. And so the Blueberry Hill Gamay is certainly my rare wine at the moment, and it's one of the best Gamays that I've seen out there. It's very dense and concentrated, and very very proud of that. And there's only 100 cases.
That's what I wanted to know. Okay.
I was certainly happy with the process. It's a very very different job for me to be coordinating and organizing that sort of thing, as opposed to going to vineyards and tasting grapes. And there it's a completely different ball game, almost like in France, where a lot of wineries are pseudo wineries and they don't actually have any vineyards, or so it's an experience on working with vineyards from afar, really.
Will the Okanagan survive this?
Oh, absolutely. There's this year, there's an extremely heavy amount of vines going into the ground. Everybody is jumping right back in.
Yep.
There's a few small areas that have been maybe sacrificed towards going towards cherries and things like that. But I see the majority of growers and winemakers in the valley just continuing doing what we're doing and looking forward to a better future.
And last question, do you get a sense that we, the wine fan, are coming back, are going to support all of this winemaking that's going on, this crafting, still needs customers? Are we going to be there?
There's a huge demand for BC VQA wine. If anything, seeing the industry in the US under a lot of pressure and going through a bit of contraction re reminds me of how grateful we are and how lucky we are to have such a great market in Vancouver and in Alberta, so close to where we are.
Yep.
And those people, they obviously want the wine to be good, and they know good wine in those markets. And so, but if the wine is good, we have tremendous support from Vancouver in particular. And if anything, I think this has made BC wine slightly rare. And so everybody's looking for good BC wine, Okanagan wine. I think the VQA wines will start shining again in another year or so. And indeed, I still have some fabulous Pinot Noirs from this terroir as well for
Yes.
sale wine shop.
Can you do anything about the madness?
No, not really. That's not
Okay.
our all we can really do is do the best we can at yes. growing grapes and making wine, and hope that the customer sees the big picture. You know, the best news for us is that, you know, we're not so susceptible to some of these trends where people may not want to buy U.S. product or product bought, sourced in the USA, sure. because our wine club, our direct-to-customer sales are extraordinary. I mean, we sell the majority of our wines direct, which means that they know us and they know our story and they know our situation. So most people have had absolutely no resistance to buying the wines or tasting them here at Spearhead.
Have you got a sound system in your tractor?
Yes. All yes, right. we've got... And music in the tractor, a big sound system here in the winery, and I'm a firm believer in playing solid, good quality music to the ferments over vintage.
Well done.
My neighbors are well aware of that.
I want to remind you that Saturday is Bob Dylan's birthday.
Oh, good to know.
Play some Dylan, will you?
I will. I'll play some Dylan over the weekend for sure.
Thank you, Grant.
My pleasure. Good to see you, Terry.
From Spearhead, he is Grant Stanley. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Best Coast Distillers, where innovation meets passion on the Vancouver Island Peninsula. From sourcing our own local core ingredients to experimenting with fermentation yeasts, Best Coast is committed to pushing the limits of what's possible. Living and working in this warm Mediterranean-like microclimate within Canada is like winning the distiller's jackpot. Clean sea air, steady temperatures, and a bounty of local ingredients fuel our creativity. And perfectly timed for summer in 2025, they have released Canada's first estate-grown small batch Agricole rum. You can find all the details at bestcoastdistillers.com.